Today, how to save civilization. An interview with attorney, author, and speaker Mark Cole on what you and I can do as Christians and citizens to make a positive impact during these challenging times. You will not want to miss this fascinating, informative, and extremely helpful conversation. Welcome to today's edition, The World News Brief. And welcome to today's episode of World News Brief on the CGMRadio.com network. I am your host, Winston R. Holland. Excited and delighted and thrilled, especially today, because today is not our regular broadcast of just news and events of around the world. Today, I am thrilled to be welcomed by a man who's becoming a better and better, closer friend of mine. His name is Mark Cole. He is an author, speaker, and we'll forgive him for the last one, an attorney as well. We're so grateful to have him. And the reason why I'm interviewing him is that we're right now in the middle of the weekend conference that he's put on called Saving Civilization. And that sounds like
modest title, yeah. Saving Civilization.
Yeah. Yeah. Somehow this guy over here thinks he can do it. No, but it's an invitation to all of us to do it. So I just want to say, Mark, thank you for coming on the show and welcome to World News Brief.
Thank you. It is really great to be here, and I appreciate how you teed that up. It's been a great weekend. We still have a little bit to go, but it's been a real blessing to see people that are like-minded and burdened about where the world is and where it might be going, and really trying to do something about it.
Yeah, that's, I think, a lot of us right now, in a way that we've never had to face before, are trying to figure out and determine, like, what in the world do we do about all this? Before we jump into that, though, would you just take a minute or so and share with us, I alluded already to what you do, but, you know, what you do, who you are, and how you got to the point of wanting to do a conference about saving civilization?
No, I appreciate that. So I guess what has driven me is I've been a lifelong student of and lover of the humanities, and a lifelong Christian, and my whole adult thought life has really been kind of focused on this idea of how do Christians and how does the church, how does it kind of relate to the world, and how that plays out in so many different contexts. And I just find that question to be not only endlessly fascinating, but just endlessly important from a practical perspective about, you know, how are we to relate with the world? And you dig into that history, and the church has had so many different relationships with the world. And then you look at the times that we are in, and we all know 2020 was a tough year for not only for Christians, but for everyone. And I think that, you know, Christians kind of are really kind of wondering, is civilization kind of crumbling around us? And so my thought in that is looking at it as a student of history, to look at it from a longer, you know, the larger lens, from a larger sample size, from more years, you know, think about in terms of blocks of centuries and millennia. And when you do that, you realize we've kind of been here before, we're going to be here again. And while we would never underestimate or downplay the difficulties of 2020 or the real problems that we have, we also have good cause to believe that civilization can survive if we know what it is and if we are willing to kind of work to make sure that it does survive. So that's really the, in a nutshell, what has brought me to this day.
Yeah, and we're going to get into some of the specifics that we've talked about this weekend. I know I've taken a ton of notes. I know my listeners are just going to be shocked to think that, you know, I could learn from somebody. I'm the podcast host, so I know everything, of course. So, but no, it's true. It's actually true. I am learning stuff from somebody. No, but like it's been an unbelievable weekend for me. I mean, it really has. I've learned a lot, and I want to jump into some specifics. But before we do that, I wanted to get your, how can people follow you online? Are you on social media? What's your website and that kind of thing? Because I know I'll probably forget it by the end of the broadcast. How can people follow you?
No, I appreciate that. So I do have a little website. It's kind of a blog. I don't post as regularly as I should, but it's just called By Mark Cole. So BY and then my name, and then that's the same Instagram handle. And I do try to post somewhat regularly, but I'm going to try to do more. I'm going to try to put more writing onto By Mark Cole and more commentary, more social commentary, more, you know, historical analysis, more thoughts about poetry, you know, about music, you know, as best I can, given my commitments to, you know, the legal practice and to my family. But we all have to work hard. So there's no doubt about it. And so I'll try to do my part.
Yeah. And, you know, it really does take all of us, because it's very easy to become intellectually lazy. And so I feel like so much of even the church can really promote more so a spiritual experience, and which I am all about,
of course,
but leaving the intellectual life, which God created and which God has called us into. We're to love the Lord our God with all our heart, soul, and mind, and all of our strength.
And think about the first passage that we looked at yesterday, the beautiful, wonderful, and famous passage in Jeremiah 29, where Jeremiah reports, I think he's actually reading a letter that it was written down, instructions, but he's basically saying what the Lord told him, and the Lord told him to tell his people in Babylon, in captivity, you know, build houses, settle down, have sons and daughters, pray for the city, because if it prospers, you will prosper, and plant gardens. I know I got that out of order, but he says all of those things. So he gives them very practical things to do, even in circumstances that were from a worldly, you know, politically, sort of geographically, really not ideal, pretty bad situation. We don't have it that bad in every respect as they did. Nowhere near. Nobody has hauled us off into captivity, but yet the Lord told them to flourish where they are, and he told them, I brought you here, and, you know, by the way, since I brought you here, here's what I'm telling you to do. And so we are, yes, you're exactly right. We sometimes over-spiritualize, but yet the practical calling of the Christian, the practical duties, the practical mandate, commandments that we have been given are also very real. He told us to plant gardens, build houses, have sons and daughters. So we ought to be about that. And of course, we talked about how a garden can be taken as, you know, not just a literal garden, but it's any way that you help the city around you, the people around you to flourish. Even if those people are kind of keeping you in captivity, you're still told to pray for them and to help them flourish, because if they flourish, you will flourish. And I, you know, one thing that I said at the beginning yesterday is like, what part about this passage don't we understand? I mean, this is not one of those difficult to comprehend biblical passages. This is a straightforward, simple commandment. It doesn't say if you like what I'm about to say, you can do it. It's just here's the commandment. So this is where we have to be simple and obedient and just get about doing it.
Yeah, and a lot of people are wondering, look, you talk about the hostile situation that they were in Babylon.
Absolutely.
Just look at the situation with Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, the famous
didn't even
Bibles.
Get into that, but they had real flourishing in numerous precise examples. Exactly, yes, difficult circumstances, but they also flourished and were supernaturally sustained. Yeah, so continue with that line of thought.
Yeah, I think that for me really kind of opened my eyes, because I think a lot of us are looking at, I mean, look, we're looking at things like the Equality Act, which was passed by the House, you know, I think on Friday. We're recording this on Sunday, February 28th. I'm not sure at what point, you know, it's probably going to be at least a week before it passes in the Senate. I know they still have the filibuster in the Senate, but we're not here to really talk about the politics of the day necessarily. But you look at something like that, which really should be named the discrimination against women and putting women and children in danger and persecution of Christians Act or whatever we want to call it. And we go, oh my gosh, like you almost want to like head for the hills. You want to find some, is there another country that's free that we can go to? Like it's, you look at what's going on and that really what is, I mean, clearly like a Marxist communist takeover of our country that they're attempting to do.
Yep.
And you say to yourself, oh my gosh, what do we do? Like, how shall we live in this environment?
Right. And the answer that we have been kind of kicking about, and not to be glib, but it is really to build intermediate cultural institutions to sort of put political activism, you know, in the appropriate burner, kind of on the back burner, because if we build up the intermediate institutions, if we have enough garden clubs, if we have enough little leagues, if we have enough art leagues, if we have enough, you know, Shakespeare companies, if we have enough of these alternative cultural institutions where we have relationships, we're blessing the cities that we are in, they will find it difficult to overrun us and to take us over. And, you know, and we talked about the Italian Marxist thinker back in about 1930. He recognized this, Antonio Gramsci, and he said, look, we can't take over the West because all these cultural institutions are too strong. What we have to do is infiltrate those cultural institutions. We have to take them over, and then the political action will follow. Well, he was correct about that. And
Boy,
they've
was
been,
he.
Yeah, and they've been largely successful. And now we have to kind of turn around and do the same back to them. Or really, we have to, since we don't own Facebook and Twitter, you know, we don't own the national government right now. We have to get busy about creating culture in order to flourish. And if we never return to a constitutional republic as we would like, it doesn't really, you know, God doesn't say build houses and settle down and plant gardens and flourish until I take you home. Now, of course, he did do that. They didn't know that, but he had that plan for them. But it wasn't, he didn't say do it for the next 20, 50, 70 years. He just said, do this. So therefore, if we don't reach an end that we would identify as, okay, now we're done with that, it doesn't really matter. We're called to flourish and to bless the cities that we are in, regardless, until we are taken out of this life.
Yeah, exactly. And I think the model of the early church and the book of Acts, you know, they had the apostles.
That's right.
That were set apart by the Holy Spirit to go bring the gospel to those places that have no Christian presence, no gospel presence. But you know, there were, if you look through the book of Acts, there were Christians. That you look at Antioch, the place that sent out Paul and Barnabas.
Yes.
That was an established church, that people were there, and not in an environment that was not necessarily, you know, real appeasing to the gospel, but they were there and they were flourishing, and they were not living under a constitutional republic like
That's
we
right.
would like and what we're used to, but flourishing.
That's 100% correct. And we looked at the passage where Paul asserts his Roman citizenship, rightfully so, to the terror and astonishment of those who were unjustly flogging him. And we talked a little bit about the whole relationship of Jesus and the Romans, and we are to render unto Caesar what is Caesar's, and that is something. It does have a certain level of obedience, but everything else we're to render unto God, and that is our calling. We are present in this time and this space and in this kingdom, but ultimately we are, and the apostle said this, of course, in Acts as well, we obey God, not men, and part of our obedience to him is the Great Commission and also the instruction in Jeremiah to build and to flourish and to pray for the city that we are in. And I just find that really beautiful, and I find it also, I love unequivocal commandments, because then at that point you can just say, you know, I'm going to try my best, God, to do that. I may not really succeed, but I'm really going to try to do that because I feel like you told me that. And if you wanted to tell me something different, well, that's kind of on you. And I don't mean that at all in any sort of, you know, but like we should cherish those moments when God speaks to us with complete clarity.
Right, right. And so I guess if someone were to ask you, right, the conference this weekend is saving civilization.
Right.
Someone were to come and ask you, Mark Cole, Esquire, and I actually want to talk about your book soon. So let's not forget to mention that, because you wrote a fascinating book about the founding fathers. I just found out today. I'm gonna have to get me a copy. But if they were to come to you and say, Mark, how do we save civilization? I'm assuming you're going to start with that passage in Jeremiah. What would be your initial response? How do we save what we call Western civilization, but I think you just call civilization?
Yeah, right.
Like,
right.
How do we save and preserve that?
So I guess, first of all, you do kind of need to understand what civilization is and how it comes about and what its nature is, and then what the threats to it are. And I would say that civilization is when people working together have achieved a level of safety, and therefore you have to have kind of a non-corrupt police force. You have to have some sort of understanding of the rule of law. People need to be able to walk out into the streets without fear of indiscriminate, criminality taking them down. So you need a level of safety. You need a level of affluence, because civilization really begins to be recognizable and flourishing when you have leisure that produces kind of non-essential cultural activities, right? And human beings do this as soon as we are able. You know, you'll find human beings writing on the walls of caves and drawing pictures. Well, they're doing that partially because it perhaps served an essential purpose, but also because it just served the purpose of just being human. And as soon as cultures become somewhat literate, they began producing poetry, and they produced spoken poetry even before everything else. This is an advance in, you know, a stage of civilization. So you have a little bit of affluence, you have enough safety, and you have enough of those things to allow sort of culture to be built. And then you continue to define that, and then you, of course, most importantly, you have to hand it on to the next generation. So you have to have a mode of education, a desire for education, and a system of education. And I'm not saying necessarily a formal school system, but you just have to have the desire to pass on intellectually what is the definition of that civilization. And once you start doing these things, then all of a sudden civilization is definable. And remember, after we described, this is one of my favorite parts of the program, remember we kind of described civilization, it's kind of abstract, and we're saying, well, it consists of these things. And then I asked the leading question, which I'll ask you to ask. Remember I said, what if I were to describe civilization, and then you could say to me, give me an example of civilization. So let's do that. You say that.
Okay. Give me an example of civilization.
And my example was...
Barbecue.
And so, you know, hopefully that
nobody was expecting you to say that.
Oh, I love that. I'm so pleased with that. And then you step back from that and say, what on earth? But really, and then we made the point that this includes any sort of human activity that kind of begins in necessity and kind of becomes art. But if you think about it, barbecue is it's an essential human activity because it's providing for food. But what is it also? Well, it's community. It's competition. It's passing on knowledge, sometimes in written form, but often in verbal form. It's the accumulation of knowledge just through experience. And you don't become a pit master by purely intellectual activity. You only become a pit master by spending your time around the pit. It's also something that is communally undertaken. You mean people go to barbecues. Yes, you do it in your own private home, but you also go to barbecues, and people are continually improving. Now, so that's obviously somewhat of a lighthearted example, but it does have a long and deep history. But then you think about any human activity that has a bit of a history to it, where people are conscientiously working and building and moving forward, that is a civilization. And as long as some of those things are still existing, civilization as a whole can continue to flourish. And we talked about how also that individuals need to be wearing numerous different hats and need to be participating in various civilized activities and having more relationships that are even defined by these activities. You know, it's good to be a little league coach on a weekend. It's also good to be, you know, a Bible study teacher on that same weekend. And then you go and you work in your job, you come home to your family. I mean, we all need to wear many different hats, because what does a totalitarian society want? Well, they want you to have no individuality. They want you to do what they tell you to do and to march in line and to be controlled by what they want to thrust upon you. Every intermediate institution thwarts the schemes of totalitarians. That, to me, is part of what is essential to civilization.
Yeah, and I think we're seeing, my gosh, I mean, 2020 and into 2021, you know, you see the memes of the NPCs, you know, the non-player characters, the automatons, you know.
Right.
And it's just so true. It's mask yourself, muzzle yourself, stay away from people.
That's right.
And lock yourself in your homes and just focus on staying, and then watch CNN and
That's
MSNBC
right.
and Netflix and Amazon Prime all day.
Watch the stuff that we dole out to you.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And it's a while we, you know, wall off Washington D.C. with razor wire, and I mean it's truly unprecedented. I think I'm still in shock of really what's going on in our country. I still haven't fully processed
that's
it.
That's right.
But that's where we're at. But like what you're saying is one thing that we can do to fight against that is not take up arms and attempt to, you know, overthrow the people in D.C.
Not at all.
But
not at
is
all.
To, in a sense, retain civilization, retain
yes.
culture, and even more so maybe let this encourage us, if we've kind of been in the shadows
yes.
a little bit, to move a bit out of the shadows and maybe get a little uncomfortable. We're, you know, coach a little league team, you know, we're going to call that a cover, but, you know, but be a part of and influence, be salt and light.
That's exactly right. And in light of our predicament on social media, we can't fling our influence very far, because you can only go on social media and do the things and say the things that they want you to say. So we're really kind of left with taking local activity, local action, and communing locally. But, you know, what city, what community, what reach of a human being, what, you know, what, how far we can reach, what, you know, organization or what city doesn't need our presence with, like, say, a jazz ensemble? Like, every city needs that. Every city needs us as individuals doing flourishing cultural activities. We need book clubs. We need anything you can think of. I mean, you know, cooking clubs, whatever. You need to be out there in the community, building relationships, doing human activities that help human beings, that help human beings to flourish, that allow you also to love people and to allow them to be, you know, to have a little bit of leisure, a little bit of creativity, a little bit of recreation, and therefore to build relationships. Because again, these were things that were taken away from people in the Soviet Union. There was no intermediate cultural institutions after 7 years of communism. And that's heartbreaking to say, but I think that's a fact.
Well, and we're getting a preview of that. I mean, look at Broadway.
Exactly, right.
Look at, you know, as much as, you know, Christians might have issues with some stuff that's coming out of Broadway, but I think it's a great example of initially, you know, it is strange because so much of the arts and artists are on the left, but yet it's the left that seems to shut those things down at the same time.
It is so strange. I mean, there's you show me a journalist who believes in the First Amendment now, and I'll show you an unemployed journalist, because they just don't believe in the values anymore that have sustained our society. And so, you know, back to your point on Broadway. I love Broadway. You love Broadway.
We
had a trip to New York canceled because of the response to COVID. We love all this stuff. We have, you know, season tickets to The Hobby in Houston. And so what are we can't do that anymore. So what are we to do? Well, it's hard work, but it doesn't seem we have any real alternative but to start from scratch and just start doing it here locally. I just don't see any alternative. And that's the kind of thing that I want to be involved in. And yes, it's going to take 10, 20 years before it's really, really good. But, you know, when's the best time to start? You can answer that question by saying, well, when's the best time to plant a tree? Yesterday.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. No question.
You got to start.
So one of the things that during the conference yesterday that I think, you know, when I was discussing with my son on the drive home, like what really stuck with me, and we talked about it for a few minutes after the conference.
I love hearing that. Thank you.
Last night, sure, was you shared this quote from Vladimir Lenin that was just mind-boggling to me. Would you share what that quote is and why you brought that up?
Yes. So my wife and I were watching Fargo on Hulu, and perhaps you might say, wow, that's not very civilized behavior. And okay, fine, I accept that critique. And so just by way of full disclosure, we were watching this. It is really well done. Yes, it's violent, but it's also very human. The dialogue is amazing. There's so many good artistic human things about it. Wouldn't necessarily recommend it for everyone, but there was this incredibly profound moment where one of the more evil characters was quoting. He said he was quoting Lenin, and the quote was so shocking, I was just, my jaw just hit the ground. And it was basically something like this. Lenin said, I could listen to the Appassionata, which is Beethoven's 23rd piano sonata, I could listen to it all the time. But the problem is, and I'm summarizing, he of course said it much more eloquently, but he said, but the problem is that if I listen to this, It has a profound effect on me. It makes me want to pat the heads of people and to say and do silly things. And really, when people are living in this hellish world, I can't do that because I have to get back to, and he actually says, I've got to be about, I can't go around patting heads, first of all, because the people are going to bite my hand. But second of all, I really need to be busting heads because I got to be about the business of revolution. And again, when they said that on the show Fargo, I was just like, I can't believe even Lenin would say that. So we did the research, and it was actually Maxim Gorky said this in Lenin's eulogy. And so I put it up there. I was like, look, this is an enemy of civilization. He is specifically acknowledging that listening to this piano piece by Beethoven, which is, of course, extraordinary, makes him more of a human being. And he has to self-consciously resist becoming more human in order that he can go back and do the violent and sick work of revolution. He said that. He acknowledged that himself. And we had a really interesting exchange because I said, isn't that disgusting? But you said, I also take that as kind of an optimistic thing. So elaborate on that point.
Yeah. So, you know, when you hear a quote like that, you're going to have a range of emotions. For me, what I was struck by most, I think you were more initially sickened by
That's right.
And for very good reason, by the way. Very good reason you were sickened by it. I was struck by the possibilities of it, of the powerful influence that music can have, now for good or for evil, and the idea that Mozart
yeah.
could tame one yeah. of the most brutal men
yeah.
to ever walk this earth, and he has to stop listening to it because
yes.
it subdues his behavior is astonishing to
it's
me.
It's astonishing. It made him briefly more human, and he was aware that that was happening, and so he just said, I can't do this anymore. But you're 100% correct. The fact that this piece of music could make him be more human is extraordinary. And so
do you think that that's why, I mean, because obviously if you're talking about genres of music, classical music is not the stuff everybody's talking about today.
Oh, that's right.
And we're not demonizing all other music. We love all
No
kind.
Way.
No way.
Way.
We talked about blues
yeah, that's
and
right.
jazz, and we both
yeah.
love rock music.
Yeah.
And so it's not that, you know, somehow classical music is the righteous and holy music and no other music is good. But it seems like classical music might be a lot more important than we realized.
Oh, I think that's fair to say, and I would encourage people to follow that thought, and I would love to have a role in encouraging people to do exactly that. So I think that's a great thought. But really, as you were saying, it's all music as well, and we should listen attentively and with some real ambition to understand and to become better listeners. To the extent you have musical training, you know, apply that to the music that you listen to. There is no question in my mind that being involved in music makes us simply more human. I mean, I really do believe that. It doesn't make us godly as such. It does make us, however, more civilized, and it makes us more human, and more music would be better.
Yeah, no question. And I think classical music being a regular part of people's music repertoire, not that it's the only thing, but gosh, it does do something to soothing the soul that maybe other types of music does not do. I don't know that, you know, Lenin would have to avoid rock music if they even, I'm not sure what they had in Russia in,
right.
you know, in 1915, but it does seem like in terms of it just seems like it could only be good for our society
yes.
if classical music just came more back in vogue. So
totally agree with that.
So like, okay, so
and we have amazing resources on that. I mean, even Spotify is a great resource. I mean,
it is.
We have an abundance of resources. YouTube
yeah,
is a great resource.
Pandora. I have
of these things.
I have
yes.
a Bach or a Beethoven. I think I have a Bach station on my Pandora.
Yeah, right.
I pay $5 a month, and it's just whenever I want to. Classical music, I mean, it's just boom. You know, of course, I have a mix of Lord of the Rings and stuff in there, my favorite classical piece of all time. But uh, But yeah, and it's so easy. It's so accessible.
Pandora introduces you to similar music as well. It's a great little educational thing. If you pay attention to it, you will absolutely learn more about music and find other things that you're interested in. So we have it's an embarrassment of riches in terms of how available music is to us. Now, obviously, live performances are difficult right now, but we should get back into that, and we should start doing this on our own and not looking to, you know, the large culture institutions to do this. We need to just be doing this within our neighborhoods, and I really do believe that. I mean, I would love for us to have a symphony here in our hometown. It might not be great initially, but let's get, when's the best time to plant a tree? Let's get started.
Yeah, and I mean, it's probably going to be a little better than maybe the intermediate school one or something like that. Nothing against your intermediate school kids that are in the orchestra. That's great stuff, but I think
people would come out for it.
Yeah, and I think, because there's a lot of people, I think one thing that we're seeing, and this has been blossoming for a long time, is the Christian theater, but also the Christian film industry, Christian film world, where, maybe people can engage in and be a part of these films, whether they're producing or their crew or they're acting or something like that. And maybe they don't become world famous and become millionaires and all this, but they are engaging the culture, and they're producing content that can then go out to the culture, even though they don't live in LA in a big house or whatever. You know what I'm saying?
So those opportunities are more real to us now than they've ever been, and this is where technology does benefit us.
Yeah, it does, and I think that's one of the things we talked about. Because it does, technology, like everything else in life, is a double-edged sword. And so
that's right.
It's like anything, you can use a television to watch your old wedding video or to watch a fascinating program or to do much worse that I won't even mention on this podcast. So how do you, I guess, in terms of technology, I mean, how do we kind of move forward with, obviously, because some of the technology is key, and we alluded to this a little earlier, some of it's kind of keeping us down and censoring and that kind of stuff. I mean, what do you think is a Christian view of that? And then I want to get into kind of the activity where we partook of today, which is a different kind of a different thing in culture. So, if there are, Mark, okay, we're dealing with all this junk with technology and the censorship and cancel culture and all of that. Like, how do we as Christians, how do we as a community, as a civilization, move forward with this without, destroying ourselves?
I mean, I think we just have to talk to as many people that kind of share our burden and kind of share our fear that if we don't do something, that the culture is going to kind of close in on us and civilization will die. And one person can't do everything, but we need to, every time we find a person that is at least somewhat like-minded, we need to be seeing how can, we work together to accomplish something.
Yeah.
And everyone has gifts and strengths, and everyone has weaknesses, and everyone needs to find a role to play. But in order for us to find a role to play, we have to be talking about it a lot. And that's really kind of was the genesis of this conference. Let's just get talking about it. Let's not give up. Let's don't moan and complain about what the left is doing. Because that just saps all the strength and energy away from you.
Does it.
It makes you feel like you're losing. We're not really losing. There's so many things that we can still do that are beneficial and help culture and local communities to flourish. There's so many good things going on. Let's just focus on those, and let's do those, and let's do them with excellence. And that requires, working hard. If you're working hard to make your orchestra really good, you're really not going to have time to worry about what the left is doing.
Right,
what I mean?
Right.
And I think that's just a much better way to go about things. And again, you're back to Jeremiah 29. God didn't say, well, as you're complaining about how unjust the Babylonian government is to you, see if you can work it in to build your garden. He didn't. That's not what he said.
Right.
He said, plant your garden, settle down, build your houses, and have sons and daughters. So
flourish.
And flourish.
Yeah.
So we have a way to live a enriched human life and to help others do the same. And That's a good thing. That's another aspect of having the good news. So let's do that.
And you're not saying, like, don't vote. And you're not saying that there's no place for political activism.
Of course.
But
I just think that our focus and our energy needs to be directed to culture building and civilization building in at least the shorter term.
Yeah,
I really
yeah.
do.
Well, and I think they're right. I mean, Ben Shapiro, we talked about this.
Yeah.
You know, politics is downstream from culture.
Right.
And Gromsky
yep.
said it.
He recognized
I mean,
that.
He did it.
That's
I mean,
exactly
in the 1930s.
Right.
And how, I mean, gosh, how prophetic. He
yeah.
was probably a flat-out atheist, but how prophetic he was, and they were patient, and this worked slowly and slowly and slowly and slowly, and now they've really captured all of the major institutions. But that still doesn't mean that all is lost, and we still shouldn't despair. And just because we're facing challenging times in some ways doesn't mean that we can't flourish. And that, of course, doesn't mean it's the end of America.
That's right.
End of America either. But we did an activity today that I was really looking forward to, and that was a wine tasting
right.
and a wine pairing.
Right.
That was a lot of fun. We kept it pretty moderate, so nobody getting sloshed over here or anything like that.
Not even.
But
right.
you know, in a conference on saving civilization, right? I mean, this is a bit, we're gonna, you know, what can we do to save civilization? We're gonna do a wine tasting.
Right, and we heard the story of how the entrepreneurs, you know, how hard they worked getting their winery together. I mean, this is hard work. It takes a lot of knowledge. It takes a lot of patience. It takes a lot of trial, a lot of error. And they were ambitious and patient, and they worked really hard. And they're doing a pretty good product. And it's here. It's local. And we just really enjoyed it. And then you think about that within the larger context of wine and its history, which goes back thousands and thousands and thousands of years, and how people have painstakingly improved it, you know, and you have, you know, all these regional specializations, and you have just all of this knowledge built up. I mean, wine is civilization as well. It's another form of civilization. So any way that we can acknowledge that, understand that, and participate in that, you know, I'm for that. And I just loved hearing the story about the winemakers today because again, they just worked really, really hard, and they're bringing wine to Texas, which is not really the ideal wine growing region. We're getting there, but it doesn't have the same climatic advantages of other places, but it's exciting to see people putting forth tremendous effort and succeeding.
Well, and this particular
winery,
yeah, the guy. I mean, he spent what, like 3 years up in
Fredericksburg.
Yeah, yep. Fredericksburg. You know, sleeping on people's floors and
doing
stuff
the work
for free.
Yeah,
you know, it's just it's really a very American story.
That's
in the
right.
sense of a pioneering of. Not really a pioneer. Other people have done, I guess, in Texas is kind of pioneering, but of just really having a vision and then doing what it takes to
doing the
get
work
there.
That's exactly right. And, you know, I would say that when Christians decide to participate in culture, we do have to avoid the notion that we have to avoid the temptation to feel kind of entitled that because we're doing righteous work that our stuff is going to vault to the top. Well, it's not going to vault to the top unless it is also excellent. And
right.
we're competing against people that have done this for decades and decades and decades and are really good at it. I mean, there's some really good, you know, pagan people out there. Some of what they're doing is not good for the culture. Some of what they're doing is good. But just because we have a sort of a righteous kind of motivation doesn't vault us to the top. You know what I mean? Like, we still have to do the work.
Boy, and Christian film, I think, is just, if there's any proof of that, and look, there's some really great Christian film.
It's in its earliest stages.
Yeah,
right.
It is. But there's some really terrible Christian film.
Right,
but
right.
I'm grateful for those terrible Christian
you
films.
You have to start. You have
gotta
to
start somewhere,
you
right?
You got to start. That's exactly right. And you have to have the humility to do something that's terrible. And then you have to have the discernment to say in your second film, man, that first film was kind of embarrassing.
Yeah, you got to be willing to learn, right?
That's exactly right.
Yeah.
That's exactly right.
Absolutely.
You got to have humility.
Yeah.
But you also have to have ambition, and you have to move forward steadily and recognize that you don't get there until you've put in the hours. And, you know, the winemaker today, that story of going to Fredericksburg every weekend for 3 years, just
amazing.
Working so hard. I mean, that's a perfect testimony to how civilization advances.
Yeah, no question. So, you wrote a book on the founding fathers.
Yeah, and specifically on the signers of the Declaration of Independence.
The signers of the Declaration. And I'm just real curious, you know, obviously your big thing is civilization. So these were the men that really, I guess in some sense, continued civilization, maybe expanded upon an existing civilization. But what really led you to, what's the name of the book? How can people get a hold of it? And then what led you to write it?
No, I appreciate that. It is on Amazon. It's just called Lives, Fortunes, and Sacred Honor, which is, of course, the famous phrase at the end of the Declaration where they so movingly say, we sign here and we pledge our lives, fortunes, and sacred honor to the cause of independence. And they did, as so many other people have pointed out correctly, they put everything on the line. Some of them lost their fortunes, some of them lost their honor, and a few of them even lost their lives. So they were serious about their commitment to that cause, and they were some of the more formidable people of that era. I also like how you said that it was really a continuity of civilization. That is the exact right way to interpret that. It's different from the French Revolution in that respect, in that they were really kind of restoring the rights of English-speaking peoples that have always existed. And really it was, you know, King George III that kind of deviated from that, and they protested and they gave them fair warning and they said, look, if you continue to do this, we're going to have to leave. And then, you know, by 1776, it was too much, and they said, we're done. We're moving forward with our own vision, and we're now independent. And I've just always found the founding era, not only the independence era, but the founding era, to be extraordinarily interesting, because they are really just incredible people, and, you know, creating a constitution, and of course, you know, in between the Declaration, you know, you've got the Revolutionary War, then you got the Articles of Confederation. Very, very difficult, difficult times, but incredible perseverance. People that worked hard, sacrificed so much, worked so hard, and ultimately were able to create a system which, so long as it was tended to, really worked pretty well and was a boon for human freedom and liberty.
Oh, no question. So I am curious, as you were writing the book and you're researching, what was something that you would, maybe something from the book that's a big kind of takeaway or a big nugget that you can share, something you wrote in the book that you're like, you know what, this is especially special, I can't, you know, to avoid being redundant there, but, you know, from just something from the book that you really saw as powerful that maybe you can.
Yeah, I don't think I'd ever fully appreciated just the poetic nature of the relationship of Adams and Jefferson. I mean, this is extraordinary stuff,
yeah.
And you can't really make this up, and it gets very moving, and I might get choked up. But so consider they were both young in the era of independence, utterly indispensable, both of them, to the era of independence. Then they go on through the founding era and they become, you know, active in the national government, obviously. And they were, you know, very bitter, competitive, you know, enemies. And I mean, I have a point of view on that, and others might have a different point of view, but I think Jefferson treated Adams pretty shabbily, but I think Adams also brought a lot on to himself. He was not humble, you know, and so that era has a lot of pain in it. Adams, of course, did not attend Jefferson's inauguration. They were really enemies by that stage. But then after Jefferson is president, they both live a long time, and this is where the kind of the poetry begins. And so I forget exactly how they were sort of reintroduced, but one of them, it may have been one of the wives, I can't remember.
Well, I read a letter.
Okay.
I remember reading a letter that was written, I think, to Jefferson. A man had a dream.
Okay.
And in the dream, I remember Jefferson and Adams were reconciled in the dream. And I saw it on David Barton's Wall Builders site, this particular letter. But I found it very, so my understanding is that that was shared, I think, with Thomas Jefferson, and perhaps that's what began the reconciliation.
Well, and
process.
The reconciliation absolutely occurred through a series of letters, and you can actually find, and it's a big old volume. In fact, it's actually out there here At our conference on our list of suggested resources. It's the Adams-Jefferson correspondence, but it's all after they are both president, and it is their reconciliation. And of course, you know, we look at this, and it's just kind of embarrassing because these guys, man, they could write, and they're often, like, you know, using untranslated Greek in their letters to each other because they're just at a different level right, of right. intellectual, you know, achievement. So this goes on, and they have, you know, a intellectually engaging, of course, but a pretty warm relationship that develops over the years. And then, and this is where you're just like, you know, God is also a poet. And then July 4th, so I guess what's the math here? What's
1826,
right? Or is it 36?
Or I know it's 50 years
after. 50 years.
So 26, right?
So 26, I think so. So they've both been out of office for a long time. And they both die on the same day. And I think that Jefferson actually died first. And doesn't Adams say something like, well, at least Jefferson is still alive? You know, it's just heartbreakingly beautiful. But to think that the two titans of independence, and they really did live longer than the other signers, and to think that their journey together and then apart and then together again is just like, if you wrote a novel like that, people would say that it's kind of it's too simple, it's too romantic, it's too idealized. But this is not a novel. This is history.
Yeah, there's no way that they're both gonna die. These two larger than life
on that day,
founding fathers, 50 years to the day, July 4th, 1826. Yeah. You know, 50 years to the birthday of it. It's just. It is unfathomable. So we'll definitely give us the name of the book one more time.
So it's just Lives, Fortunes, and Sacred Honor.
That's right. By Mark Cole. So yeah, check that out. I'll put a link to that in the show notes
thank
as well
you.
So people can.
And there are, you know, it's easy to get taken up with Adams and Jefferson and Franklin and the other famous signers, but there are some less famous signers that have amazing stories, and every story in there is worth engaging with, because they're, you know, to a man, they were very excellent.
Oh, I mean, I just read a book recently on Patrick Henry, and it was just like, oh my gosh, you know, the only thing I knew about this guy was give me liberty or give me death. And then you found out this guy was like on fire for Jesus, and he in Washington went to the Constitutional Convention what was it called before the Declaration of Independence?
Continental Congress.
Yep. Yeah, thank you. To, you know, traveled with Washington. He was, you know, because they were all in the Virginia delegation. You're like, oh my, there's so much there. So I look forward to actually getting and reading your book. That should be good. So let's end off with, you know, we've talked a lot here. I guess what I would ask is, what is your final encouragement to us? You know, a lot of us are just, you know, right now there's so much uncertainty in a way that there hasn't been for a lot of us really ever in our lifetime that we're faced with and we're looking at right now. You know, I guess final words, how would you, to give a few sentences or a few paragraphs of encouragement, like speak to those of us who are really just going.
I think I would say get out in your community and do something constructive that is building your local community and that helps people to flourish in some way, you know, perhaps leisure, perhaps arts, perhaps, you know, even like a, you know, a local community safety thing. But just get out there in the community, make some friends, and be a blessing to your community, and find like-minded people, and then go to the next level and do something else. And go with your interests, and just recognize that as you're doing this, you are building civilization. Yeah. You are building a bulwark against the totalitarian impulses of those who want to come in and tell you, you know, stand here, march here, wear this, do that. You are standing against the tide of totalitarianism. And you're also blessing your community, so therefore you're being obedient to God. But be of good cheer, and don't despair. Let's stop the belly aching, recognizing, of course, that the situation is pretty bleak. But there are things that we can do to preserve liberty, to preserve civilization, to preserve our sanity, to preserve what is good about America and American life.
Amen. Could not be said better. You know, I. I recall a speech that Clarence Thomas, my favorite Supreme Court justice.
He's such a hero.
Oh my gosh. Well, and we're talking about canceling. Amazon just kicked off Amazon Prime, a Clarence Thomas documentary, like a pro Clarence Thomas documentary. They stopped streaming. I mean, it's absolutely during Black History Month. I mean,
these people are beyond sickening.
I know we could start bellyaching pretty quick, right? But I remember one thing he said that really struck me. He was just like, you know, one thing that you can do to just make your communities better is to just be good citizens.
Absolutely.
Be out there.
That's right.
Be good citizens. And it was real simple.
Yep.
It was real simple.
So, but to do that, you do have to be outside of your house, outside of your own worries. You do have to get out there into the community, and you have to start building. And so, let's do that. Let's do that. Let's, you know, build some parks, build something, work with others to create something of value for your community. Be a good citizen. I mean, Justice Thomas is right. What an amazing and beautiful human being. You have just such the highest regard for him, and to see him treated shabbily is painful.
It's a disgrace.
But we have to use that pain to build civilization in our communities, and that's how we have to push back, and we have to push back with something positive and flourishing.
Yeah. Amen. Well, Mark, this has been a blast. It's been a ton of fun. Thank you so much for joining us. And we're not done with the conference. We're about to jump back
right,
in there.
Right.
But Mark, thanks again.
Absolutely.
For being a part of the program.
No, thank you so much. Appreciate the opportunity, and good luck with your program. And to all the listeners out there, you get out in your community and get some good stuff done.
Yeah, amen. Thank absolutely. You. And remember, you can find Mark online by markcole.com, also on Instagram at @bymarkcole. I will put his information in the show notes of this podcast. So be sure to check that out. But you'll probably after this, you're going to probably want to hear more from him, learn more from him. That's how you can do so, and that's how you can grow. He's a lot of his original writing and poetry, and there's just so much more to Mark than what's on this broadcast. So make sure to follow him there. All right, well, that will do it for today's episode of World News Brief. Thank you guys so much for joining us. Make sure to check us out online, cgmradio.com/world, and subscribe to the show if you haven't already. Email me, world@cgmradio.com, and check out cgm.news for all the latest CGM news and the most important news of the day. We'll see you next time. Thank you so much, and may His kingdom come. His will be done on earth as it is in heaven. We'll be right back.